Hello, and welcome to the 10th Millennial 2016 Hangout. This is with Stardusk, the famous MGTIE, one of the earliest MGTIEs. Would that be a correct statement?
I'd say so. Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching your videos five years ago. It was 2011, I believe it was.
I've been around for a while. Yes, that's true.
Okay, so we're going to talk about... what you've seen of the alt-right. When did you first become aware of the alt-right?
That's a really good question. I think about a year plus ago. Yeah. Years ago, something along those lines, yeah.
Okay. And it's obviously become more high profile this year. So, when did you first start to realize that, how did it seem to you at the start? I mean, what did you hear about it?
I think the audience might realize, I'm not one of these people like Sargon of Akkad or whatever. I generally, if I don't know something about an organization or group of people, I'm not going to cast judgment. I really just wanted to find out about it, to be honest. And that, I didn't really have an impression. I listened to various videos and opinions, and I've talked to people like Pale Hamid. I've talked to a number of people either involved with the alt-right or, I'm subscribed to you. I approached it with an open mind, I'd say that. And I'd also say that, unlike some of these other people you interviewed, the ones who aren't involved with the alt-right, I'd like to say I've maintained a position of neutrality towards the alt-right overall. Yes, moderate centrist.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fine. It does intrigue me very much too, because when I first noticed that you were watching my videos, I did get nervous, actually. I thought, God, I wonder what he thinks. I wonder if there are things that I'm missing that he is perceiving in this whole thing. And I wasn't, and then I think we spoke, when we first spoke in March this year, I believe. And we've been planning to do a hangout ever since then, but your schedule has been very busy, and so has mine. But I was always intrigued to think about what you saw in it, in the alt-right. And I suppose you could break that down into various... I mean, my channel has its own character and so on. But what would you say to that?
I think, well, once again, I just to sort of differentiate my position from people... How would you describe Sargon and some of the Spinosaurus kin and some of these
other... they call themselves skeptics.
Right. I don't find them skeptical at all. Well, like I said, I took the time in detail to understand the positions of the alt-right, and they're not positions I personally feel, but I understand why you guys feel the way you feel. I understand... So, for example, I'm it's not the right word, sympathetic, but I mean, for example, this is talked about frequently, but Jews are incessantly ethnocentric to the point of, we've talked about this privately, but they're Jews on your average Jew has a complete lack of self-reflection, especially towards his or her own ethnocentrism, constantly promoting these interests. And gets very upset at, say, white nationalism. But it's kind of the same thing, really. It's not so. I mean, that's an example of hypocrisy. So it's right that the alt-right, I think, points that out. And in general, just other as well as other groups. I mean, seems like every group on the planet promotes ethnic interests and goes along those lines. But it is kind of hypocritical, well, more than just kind of. It's hypocritical to then find fault with white Europeans who do the same thing. I mean, I'm generally not a huge fan of any of it, but you know, if everyone else is doing it, why can't white people? That's kind of my attitude. Mm. But it's not something that resonates with me personally for a variety of reasons, but I understand it. And I think given the circumstances, one can find a justification for it.
It sounds like you're coming from a position where you would be quite okay with everyone just sort of living alongside each other, mixing and so on. But if all these other groups are allowed to have ethnocentrism, then you don't think it's fair that white people are not allowed to have it?
So I'll separate my answer in two parts. Am I okay with it? I mean, I'm European. I consider myself, you know, although I was born in the United States, I spent all my adult life in Europe. I'm Hungarian. I mean, I support many of the ideas of race realism. So I don't know how plausible it is for, say, tons of Africans to be living in Europe. I think on aggregate, it probably wouldn't be. You'd kind of essentially lose what we know as Europe. So would I be okay with it? Well, if everyone were the same, yeah, I'd be okay with it. But people aren't the same. Different genetic populations are not the same, so I don't know how plausible that is. a lot of that has to do with IQ and some other things, but so that's the first part. And yeah, it's the second part. Yeah, I mean, if everyone else is doing it, it's wrong to say, you know, oh, you evil white people, why are you doing it? Because it's just it always is, and it's something I can understand. You know, the bad guy is the white guy, whatever he does.
Oh, at this stage, yeah. I mean, MTV are not putting out videos like what black men can do better in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's gotten to the point of absurdity, and I think, whilst I'm not, I mean, I understand the alt-right, and I think, given the exigencies of our time, it has some sort of justification for a certain group of people. I understand it. And if I were a different person, I mean, it just doesn't resonate with me. I just don't, like, I can't seem to get worried about the fate of the white race, as it were. Although I am worried about Europe.
So yours is a cultural concern that hinges on racial mechanisms. Because, I mean, you're concerned about European culture, and you know that, or you believe that it could only be sustained by white people. Is that accurate?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd exactly put it that way, but I think that you could say that, yeah. Something along those lines. I haven't actually thought in great detail on whether it'd be, but I do think that various institutions, and even... You know, even I just came back from Ukraine on Friday, you know, yesterday. And even then, you just see the the vast, vast, and truly vast differences between Western and Central Europe and a place like that. And, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said probably for the connection between culture and certain groups of people. In fact, well, almost certainly, I would say, because I haven't done anything on Europe, but a while back I put out a video on the development, specifically of Korean, but East Asian culture, and how recent discoveries in the field of genetics have shown that there's actually a connection between certain alleles related to social sensitivity that are much more common in those cultures, and the actual structure, things like Confucianism, what have you. So at this stage of the game, I think it's safe to say that we can assume that there almost certainly is a connection, a very deep connection, between general genetic tendencies of specific genetic populations and cultural outcomes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is something where that is what the alt-right have been saying, and other people have been saying for a long time. The alt-right has been asserting that as a sort of given, or as an assumption, for, well, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 years. And I think the genetic evidence is starting to emerge to confirm that intuition that behavior is not just, I mean, obviously it is to a large extent culturally learned, but it's also genetically hardwired, which means, well, you know, the implications of that are that some people, some entire groups will never be able to really conform to a particular culture. Because it's just not in them to do so. They will. Hugo.
Well, so I'd like to be specific. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about genetics, the majority of the people in those groups will not. But they're always going to be. I'm not going to say, oh, they're all the outliers. But I mean, when we talk about genetic populations, we're talking about allele frequencies. So, I mean, in the case of say East Asians, the people have these social sensitivity alleles. They do really well in that society. But then you get their further studies of people who don't have it, and they're actually, say, Korean, and they actually do better in, say, an American-style society. But by and large, yes, a majority of a population will conform to certain patterns. And I think you weren't on there with him. I think it was Kraut and T. I got really annoyed with his statement, and it's kind of related to this, that trends, that is, population trends, are not good enough for designing societies. Well, the problem with that statement, because I do think it's related, is that we've never been able to run hard scientific experiments on, you know, entire populations, and all we have are trends at the end of the day. So I'm not really sure why he made that statement. I just thought I'd throw that in there. He's one, you know, Kraut and T, right? He's one of these cultural.
He's one of the skeptics. Right. Well, a cultural libertarian, very cultural libertarian. Well, you know, he came through for me recently when I was being attacked in the media. Well, I should narrow it down. It was the Scottish media. So I was being attacked, and he made a video condemning the press for doing this. And so I feel grateful to him for that, and therefore I am reluctant to criticize him publicly too much. But on the other hand, it's blatantly obvious that he and I have some profound disagreements. And it's a difference of attitude. I think the difference of attitude is more important than the difference of beliefs, because, you know, obviously your attitude kind of determines which beliefs you're going to end up holding and defending. And, so I'd rather not personally talk about him, but well, I certainly won't.
I only brought that up because, I mean, it seems that, you know, in the alt-right dealings with the skeptics, this is such a terror. They're not skeptical at all. I've had encounters with Spinosaurus and Sargon. I mean,
God, Spinosaurus and I.
They're the furthest thing from skeptic, I can assure you.
Spinosaurus. I don't know if you've kept up with this or you heard about it, but he and I had him on, I think it was a week ago now, for a hangout, and then 2 days later he stabbed me in the back by dredging something up and just blowing it out of proportion and basically being a little bitch. And I would, you know, it's disgusting to me because when he was talking to me, personally and in the hangout, he was very civil, very polite, friendly. We had a few laughs and all this. And then 2 days later, he did that. And this does speak to something that I have suspected about the skeptic crowd, which is that basically they're moral cowards.
Well, if I might interject, I'm going to make some differentiation here. I've had encountered Spinosaurus Ken as well, and this has been my experiences with him too. I'd say that of the so-called skeptics, he's probably the worst. He's a shameless opportunist who will do things along the lines of what you've described. I've seen it done to me and others before. He's a kid, basically, who likes his clever. Well, he thinks of himself as clever, although I've seen him say some pretty stupid things. And he likes his ascendant fame and being in the spotlight. So, I mean, you know, what better way in this case than the sort of badmouth, I mean, you're sort of a clarion for the alt-right by now. You know, badmouth millennial woes. He's done it to me and some other people in the MGTOW. He's not someone who deals with you fairly. Sargon, I think, is in a slightly different category. I mean, I've had my issues with him too, but he's, I think he's a more reasonable person, I suppose, would say that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Oh, I don't put them in the same category. I mean, they're both part of the skeptic. I think Sargon calls himself a skeptic. I think he identifies with that label. But, it's the difference between an adult man, an adult mentality, and a teenage boy who's primarily obsessed with social status.
Well, that's it. Spinosaurus is very much, based on my observation, obsessed with social status, and I don't really use the term skeptic. I call them anti-SJWs. I always thought that was the correct term. I mean, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But yeah, Spinosaurus Kin is pretty low on the ladder there. well, fancies himself.
It wouldn't surprise me if a year from now he has a very big following.
I don't doubt it. I mean, yeah. I mean, let's face it. If one truly wants to, you can break one can break YouTube down in many different categories and you know, basically market niches, if you will. And being involved in the anti-SJW communities it's great. I mean, I would go mad by dint of the repetition, but yeah, I mean that's a good market niche to be in, no matter how unqualified you might be, such as the case with Spinosaurus Kin.
Well, exactly. And this is why, you know, when they say something like, well, we've got far bigger channels than the alt-right, you know, I have a very easy answer to that. Yeah, it's because your ideas, your message, are just infinitely easier to swallow than those of the alt-right. I mean, it's easy, low-hanging fruit, which any dipshit can plug into and feel clever about. You know, I just don't respect it. I don't even...
Neither do I. There's great evidence for this, by the way, and I'm sure you heard about Baring.
I've heard of that. I'd never seen his channel. I'd never watched any of his videos. I hadn't heard of him until I heard about him being...
He's a loudish bogan. That's how I would describe him. he was such a moron that he had been running this channel with a very much copyrighted image from some former television program, subsequently taken down. Immediately jumped the gun, assumed it had been, you know, SJWs. But this guy just makes low quality videos of basically calling people, well, cunts. That's what he does. He says, everyone is a cunt, and people, you know, they lap it up and they support him. I mean, it's a good example of low hanging fruit, and also another very good example of the entry point being, pretty accessible to just about anyone. Baring is just absolutely dreadful in this regard. unless he's just putting on a show, he typifies that image of the... I've talked to Reactionary Expat a number of times. I know you're good friends with him. The bogan lout that just sounds like a complete moron. Yeah, like that kind of Australian. That's the kind of guy he is. Yeah.
Right. Well, I suppose I should go and track down some of his videos just to get a feeling for it. I mean, there are just so many of these. Like, what's his name? Thunderfoot. I can't be bothered. There's nothing there. It's empty. SJWs are stupid, and everyone should be free to do what they want. That's basically it. And I just find that incredibly hollow and boring.
Mondgaard, or Mondgaard, if you're German. So thoughts on Tildir. I'd be happy, because I think Tildir is an important exception here to these other guys. Tildir is actually a scientist. I forgot exactly what field he's involved in. But repeatedly, he's always been... he's the only one in that group of people, if you want to say he belongs to them, that accepts differences in genetic populations as almost certainly factual. No one else has the same interest in science that he has, and he's the most rigorous of all of them. I mean, he's not even really part of that community. He's just sort of, yeah, just, ich spreche auch fließend Deutsch deswegen, ne? Sorry, I was just talking to the guy. But, yeah, he's an exception. And, he actually listens in on the alt-right occasionally and thinks they have some, decent stuff to say. Just like I do. I mean, I think, I hate the term skeptic, but I tend to be a skeptical person and I approach things with an open mind. And like I said, I understand the positions of the alt-right, and given the circumstances, it makes sense for a lot of people to feel that way. Given the trends that we see, all around us. I mean, just a short while ago, there was a gentleman who, drove a lorry into a bunch of people in Berlin. I'm sure you heard about that.
Oh, yeah, of course. It was yeah. I mean, they had the dreadful summer.
Well, to be honest, though, we were due this anyway. It's like, what, how many months has it been? You know, we need another a crazy Muslim guy to kill a bunch of people, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, I think, how long had it been? When was the last one? I guess it would be, was it the one in France?
Yeah, I think August, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's been a long time coming, a good 5 months or so, or yeah, 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. And then that happened. I mean, the summer was the worst. It was Nice, and then I think 4 attacks in Germany, and then the other attack in Rouen in France. Mm. So that, yeah. Yeah, I suspect that. And of course, with this one in Germany, the latest one, one of the staggering things is just the number of fuck ups there were along the way to enable this guy to eventually do this. Mm. I don't know if you read, there was an article that listed all the mistakes made by, well, and all the instances of laziness or complacency, which eventually led him to be able to do this. I mean, it's a joke. Part of the problem is that they can't deport them, because I think in this case he was from Tunisia. Tunisia, Morocco, and Algeria have all been very uncooperative with Germany when Germany is trying to deport these people from those countries back to those countries. They just refuse to cooperate. And in this case, they took ages to deliver his papers.
Well, Millennial, for my comment on that, I mean, I've seen the face of Germany. I've spent a lot of time in many European countries, but of all of them, the most time in Germany. And this has been a trend that's been ongoing for years. I mean, even my neighborhood, I think it was a few weeks ago, I walked past a shop and I had to stop. And it was one of these Muslim women's garb shops, you know, where where the ragheads get their stuff, basically. In any event, I had to pause and look in. I just thought it was very strange that, wow, you know. But so I think this has been a trend that's been ongoing.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to stop. I think long-term, yeah, sorry, hijab, whatever, raghead, hijab, same thing. I'm a bit tired. I have little patience for the specificities of Muslim garb. But, yeah, it's just a trend that's been ongoing. And then with the refugee influx, it's kind of too late. It's why I really, in the next couple of years, want to get out and get to my actual country, Hungary. Because if it happens there, it'll take a much longer time. And I think Western Europe is kind of screwed. You know, here's the interesting thing about Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is very white. I think I saw 2 black people there only. But, you know, it definitely does not have that sort of Western European character for a variety of reasons, history, etc. I mean, it seems almost as if the very nature of, say, Western Europeans or Northwestern Europeans, it just inclines them to engage in this sort of stuff. And in addition to the history, I mean, certainly, you look at countries like Poland and Hungary, which I would describe as central sort of Europe more than anything else. And they had to deal with a very unique history that historically made them suspicious of things like, well, mass Muslim integration and what have you. So I don't know. It's I hate to say it. This is another reason why I understand what the alt-right is talking about, and I can understand why they feel concerned, but I hate to be, well, pessimistic, but I don't think anything's going to change. I just think it's going to get worse and worse.
Well, I mean, I can't afford to think that because, it, first of all, I'm not strong enough to withstand the depressing ramifications of that.
Yeah, I get that.
And I just can't stand it. And also, I have to believe that there is something we can do, because otherwise, we're just going to. I'm just going to sit here getting progressively more depressed and demoralized by it. I mean, I can't stand the idea that in 100 years there simply won't be any real Europeans. You know, whether there are any real Germans, any real French. That's just that is so appalling to me. It's unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable. It's out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that's difficult. I think most people need something to believe in. I'm not saying I'm special, but you're right. I'm a fucking depressing motherfucker because I just kind of, I'm a black pillar. That's a good way. I just kind of accept things as they are, even if it makes me incredibly unhappy. I think that's the case with Europe and my own sort of field of, if you want to call it expertise, like female nature. I don't think female nature, when you really examine it, is a particularly pretty thing, especially if you're a heterosexual male. But, you know, I just think that's the way it is. And I think Europe will go down in time the tubes. Well, so what are you going to do? I mean, I hate to say it. I can't. I'm terrible at lying to myself, put it that way.
Well, I mean, the women aren't going to save it. It's obviously. Well,
they've been a contributing factor to some of this multicultural.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
I mean, it's always young women who are in these fucking pro-refugee marches. Mind you.
Well, I could tell you a little anecdote. I live in Germany, and I haven't seen them in a while. I guess they were more active in the summer because it's a bit warmer. There are these, I think it's Amnesty International. They hand out flyers, and essentially they try to book you for like some yearly fee where you're supposed to give money to disadvantaged third worlders or what have you. And I mean, they dragged me over, and I said, well, I'm not really interested. They were really forceful, so I started having this discussion with them about why it's not a good idea to take in all these refugees. And then they asked me, you know, blah, 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 you know, German this. I said, well, I'm not even German. And then they said, well, you of all people, if you're not German, you have to certainly understand. I mean, it was basically a half an hour discussion about nonsense. And then they did it again a couple of weeks later, and I just asked them how much money they wanted from me. And I asked them three times. They finally told me 300-something euros. I just don't have any, but yeah, I mean, it's always a majority of women women by their very nature they have no sense of justice or fairness. It's all just sort of feelings and compassion in some cases, but a compassion that's misplaced and doesn't align itself well with reality. That's the problem.
I think it can be hysterical. I mean, this is endless hysterical compassion coming out, and it has to be directed. I think it does have to be directed by men, because otherwise it just goes all over the fucking place. And I think it's weird, because I think that there must be women who see these rivers of refugees coming, like walking through a French village or whatever, or German village. They must see that and think, this is going to be dangerous.
Well, that's the women respond best to punishment and fear. So if women were to get on board with, say, anti-multiculturalism or whatever you want to call it, it would be based on their own fear of being harmed. And women are very risk averse. And I think eventually if it can be documented that mass importation of third worlders is a risk, then you would get women in droves who are opposed to it. But you know, that hasn't been an established thing yet, or fact, if you go as far as to say that. So I think, you know, women are just very, they're like, they're like a vessel that accepts water, or rather sort of a flexible vessel that accepts water. Whatever the prevailing view is, they will accept it. So, I mean, if the alt-right were ever to ascend to that degree of power or influence, they would get on board. I mean, look at the the way, you know, former National Socialist women just jumped on American cock the second they got in there. So, you know, it's whoever's in power or whatever the trend is. At the moment, the trend is still, you know, accept the refugees, blah, blah, blah. Women are just very malleable. And I think whatever, if you guys really wanted, it could get into some majority position, then you could probably influence them. But, yeah.
Oh, I think so. I haven't doubted that for years. I think that if in any country, if ethno-nationalism did come to the fore and become the paradigm, whatever, if that came to dominate the political tone in that country, it would be the women who maintained it. And the women would be the ones who spread it once it reached a certain critical mass. So I've no doubt about that whatsoever. This is why I'm interested in getting women into the alt-right, because I think without them, there are loads of guys. And this is something that I wanted to ask you about, because I listened to ages, about 6-8 months ago now. I listened to hang out with you and someone else. I think it was another MGTOW. I don't think it was Coltane. I think it was someone else. And you said at one point that you think the alt-right, and I'm going to inevitably distort this because I can't recall your words, but it was something like the alt-right is largely, or whatever, about male sexual need.
I think that's fairly if I might, I don't remember exactly what I said, but male reproductive concern, yes.
So can you explain that? Because I think you might be right.
Yeah, no, I can't explain that. Thank you for reminding me. I don't remember the precise conversation, but I've said things along those lines several times. So, you've mentioned this in your own talks, but I mean, one thing that is well documented by now is that women have a much murkier sense of ethnic identity than men do, and there are good reasons for this. So for example, I made a video about this actually, or not specifically, but, there's been research done on men's and women's preferences towards eye color, you know, and it was found out several times that men with blue eyes almost invariably prefer women with blue eyes, but women have no preference for this. Why is this the case? It's because women always know that their kid is their kid, and this is what we call paternity assurance. Now, because women in prehistoric times, have always reproduced far more frequently than men, and even in cases of war where, you know, the men were cut down, they would still get the opportunity, whether it was through rape or other means, women just have not developed the same sense of group identity, which is to say they have an in-group identity as a sex, as a gender, but not towards a specific ethnic group. Men, of course, never had that advantage, and men are always in competition with other men to reproduce. And so it's only natural that men would divide these competitive lines even further along racial or ethnic lines. And so I do see, I mean, the alt-right is overwhelmingly male, and I think that will largely remain the case. Until it becomes the ascendant power, if you want to call it that. But it is an extension of male reproductive concern, because women just generally don't really care about these sorts of issues, because, well, number one, yeah, I mean, they're going to be able to reproduce regardless, and the kinds of competition women have with each other are not the same types. Yes, that's my video. Assortative mating is a delimitative factor in male ideological behavior. Thank you for reminding me. but yeah, I do think it's an extension of male reproductive concern, ultimately, because, yeah, I mean, women have no no issue with, for example, you know, mixing with a black guy or a whatever guy. They just see a guy who might be genetically fit or has resources, and that's good enough. And they know that their kid is going to be their kid. It's a completely different story when it comes to men. So I think I'm sort of done now.
Yeah. But what interested me was, I understand that context, but why specifically now? Why has the alt-right emerged now in terms of this male reproductive need?
Probably because of the trends. You'll have to wait for a separate video on what gives my life meaning, Rico. Sorry about that. I think I shouldn't be looking at the chat. It's distracting. I think there is an emerging trend throughout Europe and in the United States, certainly, to have quote-unquote mixed race babies or something like that. I mean, you visited the United States recently. You saw what you saw.
Yep.
That trend exists in... like a few weeks ago, I saw a blonde, blue-eyed woman with an African man and with a mixed-race child in my neighborhood.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I actually thought millennials probably would have vomited if he saw that. But
internally,
I mean, you see these things pretty often. I think there's what's coming out now is that because men of obviously different ethnic or racial descent are successful with, I guess, white women in this case, there's the perception that the competition is stronger, and thus more and more men become concerned with this. However, this is, I guess, the difficulty I see for the alt-right. I mean, if the alt-right were ever to be successful, is that, you know, like I said, women don't care. I mean, women don't care if the guy is black or white as long as he is genetically fit and can give him resources. So it's kind of, it's really comes down to just sort of reproductive competition. Prior to immigration, this sort of competition didn't exist. So there wasn't really, this is my own interpretation, of course, there wasn't any need for the alt-right, say 40 years ago, because Europe was just overwhelmingly white. You might have a few people, but. So it's interesting that in this time of mass immigration of third worlders who are largely, you know, darker skinned, Arab origin or African or what have you, that of course that's what's going to happen. You're going to get a much more refined group identity amongst white Europeans because they perceive a reproductive threat, whereas years ago they're
I think the fear of perception is something like this. I'm a white guy. I have ability and resources, but I might be crushed by self-doubt. I might be insecure. I might not be confident approaching women. That's one problem. And the second problem is that there are lots of black men now, and they're far more sexually forward than white men are. So it is a genuine reproductive threat.
And women, you have to admit, women respond very positively to this, I guess, more direct approach that black men tend to offer.
Yeah. I think in a lot of cases that overrides any apprehensions they might have about his ability to provide, which are, of course, very legitimate apprehensions.
Well, what you get, I think, is the this is kind of PUA rhetoric. What you get is the kind of alpha fucks beta buck scenario. So they might perceive, say, a black man as the more genetically fit option, but they might shack up long term with a white man, although it'd be difficult to hide the infidelity there. I think that's what women tend to want to, you know, reproduce with black men, but they tend to want to stay with, I would argue, probably European men.
I don't know. I can see why that would happen in the event of, if they thought that their child would stand a better chance of surviving and reproducing if he was half black, then in other words, if the situation were becoming overwhelmingly mixed race, then you'd want to have a mixed race kid, because as if you're looking at it in that utilitarian perspective, which I think a lot of, I think that does come more naturally to women than to men, as you say, in that case, you would want to have a mixed race kid because he will then integrate into the mixed race environment far more easily than a purebred or white kid would. So I can understand them then thinking, okay, these black men, I'll have the kid by a black man, but I'll get him raised by a white guy because that'll be more stable, more reliable. I can understand that thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's here's the thing. I think everything involving this issue comes down to reproduction, and women really have two reproductive concerns: genetic fitness and basically who's going to provide for the kid. In the best case scenario, they'll get some guy who can do both, but oftentimes the most reproductively fit man is not necessarily the most reliable man, or the would be the best caretaker for the children. And so women have evolved this behavior to sort of split up their investment, as it were, in men. But it's just that black men tend to be much more sensual, perhaps, or they tend to be much more, I guess, sexual in a lot of ways, and women respond positively, that they have higher testosterone levels, they tend to have a better musculature. So it's purely in terms of genetic fitness. There's something very atavistic about it, but I think black men do tend to appeal to white women more based on that.
I think they're more primal. I mean, they're more primitive, in fact. I think that's what it's a sort of raw masculinity that is not present in white men, I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't say primal is a good word. Yeah, they have that, they exude that sort of, yeah, exactly what you described, the sort of raw masculinity. It appeals to women. It kind of, I mean, forgive the vulgarity, but that's kind of what makes them wet, right?
Yes.
It's not necessarily what they, you know, what they want.
I think women are, see, I would say that is half of it. You know, another thing that can have the same effect is simple intelligence, ability. I think that has or can have a similar effect. It really, that, I know this is a cop-out, but I think that does depend on the individual woman. But it does undoubtedly, I think, raw masculinity, no matter how fucking unreliable and low quality it might be, it does have an effect on women.
Absolutely. And women, you know, women are in many ways much more instinctual creatures than men. They're less rational. They're less restrained in their emotions and their feelings. So they just react. You know, women are much more so than men what their environment is. And so, you know, let's say a place like London, which is not really, you couldn't really call it an English city anymore because it's so mixed. I mean, as a consequence, you probably see a lot, I haven't been there in ages, but a lot of mixed race couples and obviously a lot of people just don't care about this. I mean, as I said, I understand why the alt-right cares about this. And I don't feel that necessarily people like Sargon or the skeptics really give the alt-right a fair shake in this regard.
I think they're dishonest with themselves about this. I mean,
they're in denial, but it's not even, well, put it this way. I had a very, I kind of mostly do stuff, a lot of talk about race realism as well, stuff about sex differences. And I had this is, I think, last year, maybe the beginning of this year. I was just a bit tired. But so I talked to Sargon. We were talking about basically the differences between men and women. I believe it was regards to ethical systems or what have you. And he basically just said, well, you know, you're probably right, but it's not very helpful to, you know, divide men and women along these lines and blah, blah. Let's just call it all anti-egalitarian. So he just reduced, a slew of arguments that might have taken 10 minutes to construct. Like, let's just all call it anti-egalitarianism. So I think he's willing to entertain certain ideas and maybe even accept them. But, you know, the guy makes a lot of money off of YouTube, and it wouldn't be in his interest to be to be honest about this, whether it comes to, you know, sex differences or differences in genetic populations. You know, he has this idea that anyone could be anything, you know, as long as the culture is correct.
Oh, yeah, he certainly does. He certainly does. I've spoken to him three times, three different hangouts, and it always tends to come back to that. This stuff might be true, but it'd be better if we just kept an open mind so that we could maximize freedom for the individual. But I think that, well, the upshot of that is detrimental effects for the collective, which in turn will affect every individual.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, go on.
A crypto cock. Interesting. I think this is the problem, is that any admission that say there might be differences in genetic populations, and not on aggregate, not everyone in a group will be able to say assimilate or be assimilated, it's an unpleasant thought to liberalism, to the idea that, you know, given the environment, education, anyone can pretty much be anything, or at least be molded to the local culture. And I'm increasingly, it doesn't seem like the evidence bears this out. Certain individuals in these different groups might be, almost certainly will be able to, but that doesn't mean that the majority of them will.
Of course. No one, I mean, I've never heard anyone in the alt-right saying there are no intelligent black people or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other thing. This is a kind of straw man that people, I mean, this is why trends are important. I mean, when we're talking about bell curves, essentially. I mean, the interesting question, and this is the problem, I think, millennials, that we know by now that there are differences. I mean, this all just sort of falls into the same category. I mean, there are profound, really profound sex differences, and there are fairly profound, say, racial or genetic differences. But this is not regarded as common knowledge, or for that matter, you know, a topic for discussion. The consequence really should be, or the consequence of these facts should be, well, an open discussion on how do we create a society that accommodates these things in a manner that is reflected of the human reality that we live in. And as long as the denialists, that's what I call them, people like Sargon, I mean, basically that whole group of people, exist and perpetuate, well, either lies or just avoid certain topics when they have so much influence. I mean, they're combined millions of subscribers. We're not going to get anywhere. I mean, I'm mostly interested in just how, I'm descriptive, you know, how does the world work? It's why when I think it was about a year and a half ago, I started studying in greater depth genetic differences. And it was clear that's the case. I mean, I don't like the term race realism. It has this weird sort of flavor to it. But yeah, I mean, race realism, however you want to term it. I mean, you got to, if you want to design a society, it's got to be reflective of the reality you live in, not an ideal that you want to have. Now, I think this is the problem in Western society in general. We've become lost in idealism. We've become lost in these sort of, well, they're noble ideals of individual rights and blah, blah, blah. It sounds great on paper.
But
I think people, the connection to culture, and perhaps in this case, genetics as well. I mean, actually, this other video that I did mention this briefly, that, you know, it's clear that Europeans, specifically Northwestern Europeans, tend to be much more individualistic than many people. So creating a system of values that elevates the individual makes sense for this group of people. And you bring in very tribal people, such as North Africans or Africans in general, or even, you know, I mean, Jews, for example, are once again very ethnocentric. They're not terribly individualistic. They view themselves as a collective. I mean, none of that really works with these groups of people on aggregate. I mean, there's certainly going to be some exceptions, and so, you know, maintaining that philosophy, political philosophy, it sounds great, it feels great, but not a lot of these people just aren't going to conform to it. And
no, I think there are lots of clever, well-meaning white people who are just priming themselves to get fucked over by reality when their playthings, i.e. non-white immigrants, start to do things which just completely contradict the teachings of someone like Sargon.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think at some point in time, the evidence will be so massive that it'll be undeniable.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the academic studies will become not only well-known and numerous enough, but just that it will filter down into the culture in general, the society, that we will know it is risky to get pregnant by a black guy, for example. We will know it's risky to have a mixed race child because they'll have identity issues. We will know that groups' ethnocentrism is an extremely successful survival strategy. And if you let other groups into your society, they will employ that, and they will employ it quite expressly against you, against your group. And therefore, you better damn well employ the same strategy. And therefore, if you're going to have lots of groups competing against each other in an ethnocentric manner, it'd be better if you just didn't introduce that possibility in the first place by allowing these groups into your territory. I mean, there are these basic fundamental facts, which I think were known to our ancestors just by dint of common sense, but are now, have over the last 60 years been obliterated by academic flimflam, and are now just waiting to pounce on the unsuspecting egalitarian liberal ninny. And it's, I think it's going to be just so fucking dramatic, because everything is going to come crumbling down. These delusions that have been built up, and then the institutions built on the delusions, and, you know, everything. We're setting up a time bomb. I mean, you can see it in Germany. The thing is, it's not exploding, but it's fizzling. And you see the occasional result of that in the form of a terrorist atrocity, or a mosque that is hardline, or a rape scandal.
Yeah, but
whatever, or just a community that sticks together and protects its own. You know, you see it everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, the number of mosques that have been cropping up in Germany is pretty alarming. The neighborhood I live in, I mean, the Muslim population should be growing by the day. And it's clear, you know, you can see that people just tend not to mix. I mean, the Turks only really hang out with the Turks on average, the Arabs only with the Arabs. And I think Sapphire, the Portlandite, mentioned this, but, you know, what you see is a kind of gentrification. So there'll be like some, you know, special like biomarkt, like a organic store or whatever. And only, generally speaking, only white Germans will go there. And it's weird how it kind of all sort of coexists alongside each other, but there isn't much direct overlap between these groups. Yeah. And I think this is going to be, at the best case scenario, the fate of Germany. Worst case scenario, there might be outright hostility between all these people. I mean, it's...
Well, it would be pretty unique thing in history if there were not massive hostility. Yeah, I mean, between two or more groups sharing.
Yeah, I think, though, there are some mitigating factors that might prevent that. I mean, I'm speculating here, but the major cause of interhuman hostility has always been, I would argue, resource scarcity. Now, as long as you have the benefits of modernity, where people live, you know, essentially like kings, no matter how poor they might be, there's much less incentive to engage in this type of outright hostility, which has characterized much of the course of human history. So whilst I largely agree with your prediction, I'm not sure it would come true to the degree, or to a degree that would have been familiar historically, just because people have bread on the table, this entertainment, all this garbage on the modern claptrap. It's not going to, I don't think it'll end up that way. I think And I guess this is, depending on your point of view, a much more positive result is you'll just get this kind of self-imposed segregation where people just kind of do their own thing, provided the resources stay there and people don't need to fight over them. The minute there's resource scarcity, yes, there could be not just violence, but large-scale, wide-scale violence of proportions similar to historical ones.
For sure. What interests me is the long term. I mean, the very long term. That's what I'm trying to. That's what I would like people to think about. If you care about your group, and I think most people do at an instinctual level, because that's just the natural thing for most people to do. Then let's say that you do manage to set up a situation where a multiracial society, you segregate, you live alongside each other, you maybe trade with each other, whatever. Okay, that might last for 100 years or 200 or even 500 years, but within 1,000 years, those groups are going to mix. And so if you care about your group, then it's fucked. But, you know, by any sort of multiracial society, it doesn't matter if it's segregated. I mean, really, I think it comes back to the basic fact, which is that these populations were separate in the first place, and that is the only reason they are different now, because they evolved separately. If you put them in proximity of each other, they are going to mix, and that means the end of those groups.
And if one is an optimistic, and I guess to use the term black-pilled, that almost probably is an inevitability. I mean, something one might need to accept.
Maybe. It's something that I don't want to accept. I just find it, and I do wonder about this. You know, I wonder if I hadn't got into the alt-right, if I hadn't moved to London when I did, would any of this stuff matter to me? I don't know the answer to that question. I do wonder every day, why don't other people talk about this stuff? Why don't they care? Why don't they seem to care? Because presumably they would just accept this. But then I remember, throughout all of history, they did care about this. I mean, it's a very strange thing for people not to care about the prospect of their group changing out of recognition.
I think, you know, and this is in relation to women been talked about in, say, some certain MGTOW circles, but I think it really is the pall of modernity. By that, I mean the things I've just discussed, the degree of comfort that we have, the accessibility of food. I mean, people live like royalty these days. And when I hate to invoke Maslow's hierarchy of needs because it's not perfect, but say that bottom rung on the ladder there or in the pyramid of, you know, food and shelter and things like that, almost everyone has that and more. Most people have all these things. Very few people, say, in European society, whatever their ethnic descent, are struggling to sort of make ends meet. And so if you don't have that to care about, you're not going to necessarily divide yourself along racial lines and be very ideological about it. What the alt-right has, and why I think it's my own perception, there are certain religious undertones to it. I mean, you have to, there's a kind of, you know, to say believe in the white race. Well, what does that really mean? That might make sense in an American context, but in a European context, it makes significantly less sense given the different nationalities and histories. So I think to care about this sort of thing in the modern age is to feel a sense of fervor for this particular ideology. Whereas in former times where there was this resource scarcity and lack of modern comfort, people were just naturally inclined to it because that was sort of the status quo of their own psychologies and the environment. But now you actually need to sort of actively strive for this ideology, whether you're white or not. And obviously, just as with all ideologies, some people will find it appealing and others less so. That's my view.
That's interesting. Well, on that note, I'm afraid we're going to have to end this because I've got the, I knew that this would happen. I knew that we would warm up and then I would have to cut it short. So I'm sorry, but I've got the next hangout to do.
Yes, well, it's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for agreeing to do it. We will have to do more next year.
Certainly. If I'm still alive, we can do more next year.
Okay.
So I wish you a pleasant evening, and thank you to your guests as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stardusk. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See ya.